NBA is trying to finish its season, but is the league really prepared to keep everybody safe?
I don't think they are paying enough attention to the worst case scenario, because the worst case scenario to me isn't some crazy outlier scenario. It's something they really need to think about.
That is John Hollinger from The Athletic. He joined us on today's show to talk about what the NBA may look like when it comes back later this summer. I'm Seth Davis, and this is The Comeback, COVID-19 and the Return of Sports. And we'll get to John Hollinger in a moment, but first, let's get you updated on how other sports are trying to come back. Negotiations between Major League Baseball's owners and players remain tense as always. On our last episode, The Athletic's senior baseball writer Ken Rosenthal detailed the players' proposal for a 114-game season with no more pay reductions. Now Ken is reporting that owners are considering countering that with a 50-game season, because that would significantly lower the amount of money they have to pay their players. Baseball hoped to be back around July the 4th, but that start date is in jeopardy, considering that players need about 4 weeks of spring training before they can take the field. Now on to the NBA. The league's Board of Governors is scheduled to meet on Thursday. Owners are expected to hold a final vote on resuming the season and then kick that over to the players. One plan that appears to be the front runner in terms of format is to send the top 22 teams to Orlando to finish the regular season and then hold the tournament to determine the final playoff spots. Breaking all that down for us today is John Hollinger. He spent 7 years as the vice president of basketball operations for the Memphis Grizzlies, and he covers the NBA for The Athletic. John, thanks for being on the show. The Board of Governors is going to meet on Thursday, put together their final proposal, get that to the players. What do you expect to come out of that conversation on Thursday, and do you expect the players will go along?
The league is smart about, they don't bring stuff up for a vote unless they already know they have the votes, right? They're a little bit like any other political operation that way. They're not going to bring something up for a vote and then have it faceplant. Whatever they bring up, and that the going assumption is that it'll be a 22-team solution, is expected to be approved by the owners and then approved by the Players Association. Now, there are aspects of this that have to be approved by the Players Association that run deeper than what would have to be approved by the owners. In other words, because we're getting into the collective bargaining agreement and there are things in there and dates in there and whatnot, there's a lot of legalese that has to be processed through between the league and the Players Association. And getting that all the way to the finish line may take a little bit of time just because there's some detail work in there. But the basic outlines, I think, are almost a known at this point. I think the expectation around basketball is that won't present any kind of hurdle.
It's amazing, John, because, you know, our most recent episode, we spoke with Ken Rosenthal about what's going on with Major League Baseball and the level of acrimony and mistrust between the owners and players in baseball is very high and is a very major impediment. It really does seem like the NBA, the relationship between the owners and players, is as good as you can really expect. Would you agree with that? And how much is the league leaning on that mutual trust as they move forward, try to get back on
the
court?
The relationship is probably as good as it's been in the last 25 years. I mean, we had lockouts in 99. We had another one in 2011. Really, we're in a really good place right now where Adam Silver and the commissioner and Michelle Roberts, the Players Association chief, and Chris Paul, the head of the Players Association, really seem to see eye to eye on most issues. And I think the fact that the original thing in the NBA that has really worked is the idea of splitting the revenue with the players, or the revenue is split by some percentage, and that there's an accounting system to deal with that. And I think that has taken a lot of the acrimony out that still exists in baseball and maybe other sports, and you don't see it as much on the NBA side. But then I think it's, you know, it comes down to people too. I think there's just a level of trust between these parties that they're going to negotiate in good faith and do the right thing.
So we're talking about this 22-team format that eventually leads into a 16-team playoff. Now, one of your recent stories in The Athletic, the headline was, "Most NBA restart ideas are complicated. Why not keep it simple?" You recently wrote on Twitter that, quote, "The 22-team format is something that only a committee could produce." Now, that does not sound like a compliment, John. So what do you not like about what they're doing?
So they're trying very hard to keep everyone happy. A lot of the teams that are at the very bottom of the standings are okay not resuming the season. some of the teams that are marginally at the fringes of the playoff race, I think we're more interested in resumption. But I think the league is really failing to acknowledge the biggest risk, which is you're dealing with a contagious disease. You want to minimize the number of people, the number of interactions, the number of opportunities for any kind of spread, because you need to take your disaster scenario off the table. Your disaster scenario is an outbreak large enough that it either forces the cancellation of the season or creates such a farcical outcome because so many major players have been removed or quarantined or whatever, that you get something that nobody has any faith in, and it harms the league that way. So I don't think they are paying enough attention to the worst case scenario, because the worst case scenario to me isn't some crazy outlier scenario. It's something they really need to think about. And they're already 0-for-1 in this department, right? Because they didn't think about it enough in February and March.
So your issue then is not necessarily whether it's 22 teams or 16 or all 30 so much as how you're going to pull this off and keep everybody safe and keep it from being a major health disaster?
I just don't think they're worrying enough about this point. And and the thing I wrote today with Seth Partnow, we kind of went back and forth on this and on a lot of the issues that they have to deal with. Like, there's a lot they have to deal with just to get this thing restarted. I feel like they're kind of wasting this time a little bit dealing with the very tangential issue of who gets to be eliminated by the Bucks in the first round.
And you're a former ops guy. I mean, I know that even under the best of circumstances, handling operations for a basketball team is quite an endeavor. Are you just so thrilled that you don't have to try to do it under these circumstances?
Yeah, and it's hard for people who I've talked to recently, because they're in hurry up and wait mode. They know they're about to be drinking out of the fire hose, but it's hard for them to do anything yet because they don't know everything that's going to go into it. They haven't really seen one. A lot of them don't even know if their team is playing for certain or not. But two, just on the logistics side of it, there's so much that has to be done that hasn't really been approached that much yet because they're worrying about these other issues and negotiating with the players still. But they have to pull a lot together in a very short amount of time. And there's so much that goes into putting on an NBA game as in any major sport that goes beyond just getting the players to the gym.
I mean, it's my understanding that on a certain level, John, the NBA is putting out their medical protocols, or have they not figured enough of that out? Have they not divulged enough?
They haven't really divulged that much. I think they have an idea of what they want to do, but again, they have to negotiate every single detail of it with the Players Association. They want to have a bubble in Orlando of some kind. It's not clear how hard a bubble that's going to be, what kind of family of players will be allowed in, what kind of team staff will be allowed in. Can the players go outside the bubble and back in, or do they need to stay hermetically sealed inside? How are you dealing with all the other staff and employees and whatnot? Referees, statisticians, camera people, the staff in the hotel and the resort on this Disney property. It looks like it's going to be that everyone's going to go to Orlando at a Disney property, which is helpful because it's private property, so you can kind of have more of a biodome than you could somewhere else. But there's just so much that has to be dealt with, and the ramifications of failure are so steep that you just wonder, with the amount of time they have, which seems like forever, it's like still 2 months till they play the first game, but is actually not a lot of time in the context of planning to put on NBA games. If you look at Seth Partnow in the piece we wrote today brought up a great point that just to play one exhibition game down the street from their home stadium in Milwaukee took 10 months to set up because of all the logistical details. Now, this is obviously orders of magnitude more complex, and they're trying to do it in 2 months.
All of that being said, though, I mean, and you're asking very good questions, logistics, health, working these matters out between the owners and the players. I mean, are you getting any indication that this might not happen? I mean, it seems like this is definitely going to happen, that they're definitely going to give it a shot, because right now there is no season. So if something goes wrong, they end up canceling the season and they're kind of back to square one.
Yeah. Financially, they have to play out some kind of season. I think the ramifications of not doing anything and just waiting till winter are too dire. And so I do think this is a way to make up some of the lost income from not having the last 15 or whatever games of the season or the regular season and then the playoffs. So I understand that there's a financial component to this and they want to come back and play games. I just wonder how much they've weighed that because 22 to me is a political solution, right? If you're trying to maximize games, you bring back all 30. If you're trying to minimize risk, you bring back 16 and try to get it down to 8 as quickly as you can. They've opted for this middle ground that I don't know if it does either totally effectively.
This may seem like an odd logistical question, but you know, I've been to that facility in Orlando and covering recruiting for college basketball. The AAU national championships are held down there. And you know, we've all seen these big facilities where you have multiple games going on at the same time with basically just leather dividers hanging from the ceilings, you know, dividing the courts. And you might have 3 or 5 or 6 or even more games going on at once. I mean, I would assume that the NBA has got to have that kind of volume in order to finish the season with that many teams in one place. I mean, do you envision a scenario where you have multiple NBA games going on under one roof as if it were a high school tournament?
It's hard for me to see it going on under one roof. I do think they have the capacity there to have two separate gyms in separate places going on at the same time, if I'm not mistaken. I do think there'll be practice courts going on right next to each other. I could definitely see that. But with 22, they should be able to stagger the games out enough. Now, will there be games maybe at noon on Tuesday? Yeah, I could definitely see that. But I don't know if it's going to get quite to that situation that where, as we've all seen it, like high school or AAU or international tournaments or whatever, where the Lakers are playing the Clippers and 20 feet away, the Nuggets are playing the Pacers. No, I don't see that.
Well, I just want to go on record that I'm advocating for that.
It would be amazing, right?
I mean, I used to love going to these AAU national tournaments or, you know, events like the Peach Jam where you can sit in between two courts and, you know, watch the action on multiple courts.
So yeah, you just turn your head while the guys are shooting free throws. Yeah, they're like basketball without borders or,
yeah,
or absolutely. The old Euro camp or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
If anybody asks you, I'm definitely for that. and so how would this work? Hopefully, if all of this goes without a hitch, they finish the season, they have the playoffs. Now everything is pushed back so long. Now it bleeds into next season, training camp. You know, we have the biggest season of all in the NBA in terms of fan interest is the free agent offseason, not to mention the NBA draft, which is in my wheelhouse. So with the schedule being altered this way, it causes a whole bunch of other problems. What's the next step in terms of ironing all that out?
Yeah, so they have to negotiate with the Players Association about what next year is going to be look like and what the cap number is going to be for next year. And that could get a little more contentious than the negotiations over finishing out this year. Although they do have some outs, I think, where they could negotiate a pretty fair solution. The other thing is, I think everyone in the league is okay with the start of next season being pushed back as much as possible, because the more time you buy, the more you give yourself an opportunity to play games with fans, because maybe a vaccine comes along, or maybe we find some other way to deal with this crisis, or maybe we can have arenas that are 20% full, right? So because of that, I don't expect next season to start until Christmas Day. I think Christmas has always been sort of the league's dividing line a little bit, where they feel like now football's over and they step forward and they kind of own the national conversation. And they obviously get killer ratings on their Christmas Day games as well. So I think Christmas is going to be the line in the sand for the league. So I would expect opening day to be Christmas Day next season. And then they'll play until whenever based off of that, you know, could go to August potentially for the finals.
I mean, it's pretty amazing here, John, as we wrap this up. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that many of us, all of us, were unsure if any games were going to be played, if any sports were going to resume anytime soon. And, you know, I think many of us, again, even a few weeks ago, would have been very skeptical about that. I've personally been very skeptical about these resumption scenarios. But barring something really unforeseen here, we're going to have basketball pretty soon. Am I right?
That seems to be the case, yes. And we've seen other leagues start to show how it can be done. I mean, we have Korean baseball, we have German soccer, we have a couple other leagues that have started to play. I think the North American leagues are learning from that and then figuring out protocols and figuring out how to deal with this infectious disease that, I mean, the fortunate thing is that basically all of humanity is working on this problem right now. So things are getting figured out slowly but surely. And hopefully that allows a safe completion of the season by the NBA.
We could all use a bit of good news. John Hollinger, thanks for joining the show. Appreciate your work on this. We'll be following you in the weeks ahead.
Awesome. Thanks, Seth.
And we appreciate John Hollinger stopping by to break all this down for us. I'm Seth Davis, and you are listening to The Comeback, presented by The Athletic. Be sure to follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you access your podcast. Stay with us as we track the major issues surrounding the return of sports. Thanks for listening, everybody.